Welcome to the Gregarious Mammal Podcast. This is Chris, and in this episode, I speak to Emil Wagner, who leads the tooling and developer tools team for a new blockchain project called Eternity. In it, we discuss making blockchain projects usable for developers and fundamentally end users too, and the suite of applications they're looking to create to make the Eternity blockchain usable. Enjoy.
Okay, so currently in the whole Eternity project, so we're trying to build a new blockchain as an infrastructure to run decentralized apps. And within this project, I'm leading the team who is creating all the infrastructure around the core technology of the blockchain. So we're not creating the blockchain itself, but we're creating the developer tools that people need to actually make use of it. And also for like a couple of consumer-facing app, like a wallet and an app browser and things that basically is the basic, so that people have something with the launch of the blockchain that they can actually make use of it. So if we want to have them one sentence, we often say we try to make this technology more accessible. That's our job, and push, create the stuff that is necessary for adoption.
And what prompted the project to begin in the first place? What problem were you trying to solve of your own, or one that you had heard of from other people?
Yeah, so I mean, here in the apps team, I mean, one thing that we want to solve is, or that we're looking is, what do we need to do and need to develop to make the use of decentralized applications, that this could be something to be part of our daily life for everyone. And where's the obstacles here that we, where the challenges that we have to solve. And that is what we are trying to do here. And of course, we're relying also on the other side, the infrastructure of the blockchain that's built, it's also aiming for that, to be a platform that is accessible.
So just to clarify there, because I just want to understand, you're not creating your own blockchain, or you will eventually, or
no? Yes, in Eternity, we are creating our own blockchain. Okay. It's a new blockchain protocol. It's just not my team is not right. Working okay. On the blockchain itself. We are working on the application layer on top of the blockchain, which means like we are writing the documentation for developers how to use this blockchain. We build tools for developers that help them to use blockchain, like software development kits, a minimal wallet to show how to implement a wallet for the blockchain, but also an app browser for users that they can make actual use of decentralized apps. So we're basically building infrastructure around the blockchain.
Okay. Yeah. There's a couple of things there you said I'd like to get into in a bit more, but before we go there, are you able to talk about the blockchain side as well, or...?
I mean, I have
at least in
I would
high
say
level.
I'm not a specialist within this project to talk about that, but I'll try to answer your questions as best as I can. And if I have a feeling
sure.
I can't, well, then I can also
I think just more like in your mind, what do you think is different about your blockchain, and how does it compare to some of the other well-known ones out there?
Yeah, so I think so we see like the whole space. I mean, it is very interesting with this blockchain technology and this idea of decentralization, that before you had this trust in central authorities, and now you replace it with a technical infrastructure that works without the central authorities. And then like with the second generations of chains, you were able to also not only have this decentralized infrastructure that can store something of value, something like that, but you can also run have kind of contracts there and make that. But it turned out that actually once you shift your trust into this technical system that work kind of trusts, it is really important that the code you're writing here is really behaving in the way as you intended, right? And So, and there are a couple of challenges we saw with current implementations that we want to address. And of course, one is scalability, that this does not only work for a small group of people, but also as a really as a big infrastructure that is scalable enough to work for everyone. And another thing is also, as I said, that you want really your code to behave as intended. So that means there are several things you can do. Like one is like to remove the complexity of smart contracts. So that's why we have in Eternity on the blockchain itself a lot of features already on the protocol level on the blockchain itself. Like a naming system, we have oracles there, but we also have scalability solutions like state channels and things like that. So they can make use of all these features and you don't have to implement them.
Okay. I'd actually like to go to a few of these piece by piece. Let's focus first on your kind of area, the DApps, and just for anybody who's not entirely sure what that means, that's distributed apps. And it's become a popular short term already. You mentioned a couple there. So say, for example, the wallet, will that only run on your blockchain or would it also run on other blockchains?
No, I mean, of course, we start with our blockchain, with the Eternity blockchain. Mm-hmm. And currently, we don't have specific plans to support other chains. But if we see that that would increase usability at some point.
I sort of maybe forgive my ignorance or just trying to get into the detail. The wallet, what will it support if it's just running on your blockchain? Is it tokens and coins from other applications running on your blockchain? Or
yes. So okay. So since we're creating the wallet at the same time as we are also still developing the blockchain itself, the things that are going back and forth, but there will be at some point, of course, a solution to have child tokens, and they will be also supported by the wallet.
Yeah.
So I can just tell you exactly now when this will be.
This is the common phrase of many blockchain companies, but yes.
But of course, this will be there. It's a quite essential feature, right?
So it looks like you're offering the choice of two consensus algorithms as well. Two of the more common ones, proof of work and proof of stake. Won't go into too much detail of those. I mean, they've been spoken about in good detail by many other people. So I think just to mention it as an option. Maybe I've kind of spoken with a few projects that are doing similar things, but maybe if we could just, in your words, explain what you mean by state channels.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, state channels are like, there are actually kind of two ways of state channels, or two ways you can think of. One are more like working as a payment channel, which is like an easy explanation. So, both of us, we agree on to put like on chain, we put the deposit in a channel. Mm-hmm. And then within, this is a transaction written on the chain. And from then on, we can do transactions with each other in real time, mm-hmm. up to that deposit and to the amount that we once kind of blocked.
Okay.
And once we're done, we make another, we can close this channel. That is, again, an on-chain transaction. But that's it. There are the only two transactions you need to have on chain. And in between, we can make as many transactions in between us as we want up to the amount that we deposited into this state channel in the beginning. And I mean, that gives you like several advantages. One use case is to use it for as a kind of a risk management. Mm. For example, let's imagine I want to rent a car. And instead of... right now, you would probably block a certain amount of your credit card. In this case, you could just deposit a certain amount on the channel. So you show that you have the that you have enough funds for that. And then I could be charged by every kilometer I'm driving this car, for example. There could be a real-time transaction.
Okay.
And there's a more complicated version where you can even run smart contracts within this channel. And there then you both agree basically to the contract. And then one can also, if the other party is refusing to sign a certain state, then the other party can escalate this contract onto the chain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That gives you more, right?
Yeah. It was
kind of understandable.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I was asking you a leading question because I know what they are, but I just wanted to clarify that it's all the same. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's also one other use case that we didn't design the channels with that in mind, but it's actually another use case that is also quite interesting to look at in the future. And that is once you open a channel on the chain between two parties, these parties don't need anymore an internet connection to do these transactions. Only these parties have to meet physically. They could also do that in QR codes. And that is a very interesting use case for regions where you don't have always electricity or always an internet connection.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's actually a very good point. I mean, often the state channels are spoken about in the context of scalability, but it's also almost like a solution to the problem that early mobile apps had in that, you know, data connections, especially then, would come and go. And what did you do? So actually, that's a very good point. It also solves that problem, which to make the blockchain scalable, not just in terms of technology, but scalable in terms of use case in other parts of the world, apart from just sort of Western world.
Yes, exactly.
It's actually an important aspect too. So it's a very good point, actually. One of the other aspects that you have that I'd like to know a bit more on. So you have oracles. This is also a common feature of many blockchain platforms at the moment. That sort of, I guess, when you have a decentralized distributed system, obviously trust has to be amongst people. And sometimes trust is easy sort of programmatically and algorithmically to prove, but other times, sometimes maybe you want some kind of source of information to help you understand that. And your examples list election results, prices of assets, weather conditions, and some other sources of information as an oracle for people to refer to. I'd actually be interested to know, like, A, where do those sources of information come from, or where will they come from? And I guess, how do you decide to trust those sources as well as a network?
Yeah, so that is basically up to the people that use the oracles so to decide whom they will trust. So, I mean, here you have kind of the reputation of the one who provides this oracle. Mm-hmm. So that could be basically everyone. So I can say tomorrow, hey, I will create, I think this is an interesting data and I will register an oracle and with that I will give a promise that I will deliver this data. But that will be up to my reputation then if people trust me with that or not.
Yeah. And are those suppliers incentivized in the same way as anybody else on the network?
Yeah. I mean, if I provide an oracle, I'll charge a fee for people who will query this oracle. So,
okay. And have you seen, I mean, not just in your use case, but even wider, have you seen any projects that have managed to kind of encourage, like, I guess, more old school providers to be oracles, like the Weather Channel or Yahoo Finance? Or probably not, I suppose, but I
think it will take some time for these to adapt to this new technology and also
that's fair enough
going on there, I think.
Now, one of the features you have that's actually a little different and I've not heard of before, but sounds kind of interesting to me, and I think I get a rough idea of a sort of comparison to more older technology, but the naming system. I mean, I guess I'm seeing it in my mind as a bit of an equivalent to something like DNS. Instead of having IP addresses, you can name entities and everything else.
Exactly.
Something helpful. Yeah. That's an interesting idea, actually, and not one I've seen before. So.
Yes, it works very similar. I mean, some things work a bit different because it's a decentralized system. But in general, yes. I mean, right now in the blockchain space, you have to deal with this very cryptic addresses. Yep. And this is really not user-friendly. And this is a big challenge when it comes to mass adoption of blockchain technology. So I think it is very essential to replace this quite cryptic addresses with something like more human-friendly, like a name. That is also the intention of the naming system, to have something built in the platform and built in on the protocol level so that people don't have to program solutions for that as a smart contract that makes it again more complex and more vulnerable for bugs and...
No, for sure. And just you mistype one number and it goes to completely the wrong place, of course. Or maybe nowhere, probably more likely.
But. Yeah.
Okay, let's, because I can't quite see a comprehensive list. So let's go through some of the apps that your team are creating then. I found a couple in your GitHub repository, but they're probably not necessarily the most comprehensive list, I suppose. So you mentioned the wallet. And what were some of the others you said?
So yeah, I mean, right now we start basic. So we start with our base app, which is a wallet and an app browser. Mm-hmm. So basically, gives you access to the apps, and we also have been working on an integration there with an offline signing device. And maybe I can first tell a little bit more about our approach. So when we started working on this, we checked what was the best way to approach this. And for us, so I mean, it is a blockchain decentralized system, and one of the really magical things is that this works globally, right? Basically everywhere in the world. And smart contracts gives you the power to enforce your rights globally without being dependent on the authorities wherever you live. So that's why we decided to develop our applications mobile first, especially the wallet,
because
there are way more people who have smartphones and laptops.
Yeah,
that was one consideration. And then we also looked at how it's this whole process of key management, how to back up seed phrases and these kind of things. And we saw that currently, if you want to use apps and you want to switch between desktop mobile devices, what people do is basically copy paste their private keys back and forth. And this is not really, when it comes to security, a very good approach. Or they have to do a lot of transactions back and forth. So we said, how can we do this? And we make your mobile phone your central device that holds all the secrets. And then we can, from there on, you can, of course, also use your desktop computer, but it basically connects to your mobile phone and then reroutes the signing requests. And so that the private keys never leave your one device and you don't have to copy and paste them into several devices. And it's also for security consideration.
But, no, and I mean, this whole key aspect is one that really needs to be solved in the crypto world. We know in kind of traditional computing, it's a struggle even to get people to use good passwords. So at the moment, expecting people to understand key signing is we need to find some way of making it more approachable to people. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure what it is yet, but...
One of the advantages is that Once, since all users have already this infrastructure with public and private keys and so on, there's basically no need for any other application to ask for a password or define a password. People can just sign with their keys, the login and stuff like that. So in the future, I hope it will become a bit more easy.
But you're right. Strangely, you may be helped by companies like Google possibly doing that even before the crypto world does. and then maybe we can leverage that. They've talked quite endlessly about wanting to have everything password free very soon. And I think the latest Chrome browser, you can now use fingerprint readers in the browser.
Couple of technology, and we will see if we can how we can integrate something like that or connect to that, or like at some points we say that
it's interesting. I'd like to talk about the app browser, but I'd go back a step, because I notice so you have your own scripting language based on OCaml, and this is only the second time I've heard of OCaml, and I can't remember where I heard about it the first time. I think not in the crypto world. I think it might have been bizarrely a JavaScript project that was using it. You have two languages, Sophia and Varna. I guess the first question is, why create your own and not use one of the pre-existing smart contract languages?
Yeah, that was like, that leads back to what I said in the very beginning. So when we started on this, we were thinking about how can we design a system, like when you shift your trust into this technical system, that has less space for mistakes. And creating a new language for smart contracts is one way to address this problem. So we have the smart contract language Sophia for the start. Varna will come a bit later. And the thing is that, I mean, also for me, when I joined this project, I was like, whoa, what is that? But if you think a little bit about it, it actually really makes sense. So this is a functional programming language, and it's strongly typed. And basically the idea behind is to reduce the side effect and make your code really more readable and expressive.
Yeah.
So that is like, we hope like for to reduce the code that is needed, and also like to make sure that really this language behaves as you want it, and that there's less room for mistakes. And hopefully in the future, there will be even things like that you can do like formal verification on certain properties of your smart contracts and things like that, so that you have mathematical proofs that this really doesn't do anything else. Yes, that is not intended.
So. And does it compile down to do something, or?
Yeah, so this is in the Eternity blockchain itself is designed to support multiple VMs.
Okay.
And this is also, I mean, Sophia is still like a Turing complete languages, but later on Varna will be more a way more simpler language, and with that, but maybe not Turing complete, you can, it will be even easier to do these proofs and this kind of stuff. And this will be, since you have so many features already on the protocol, like the naming system, oracles and so on, you don't need that kind of complex smart contracts anymore, and even a very simple language like Varna should be sufficient for a lot of projects. But for now, we have Sophia, and there you can basically do what you can also do on other smart contract platforms.
And what? I mean, as I say, Sophia is based on OCaml, which is not massively familiar, and Varna is described as being simpler, but just, I guess you're still in the early stages, but what programming languages that people might be using might be helpful?
I think it is like, if you're used to functional programming, sounds like Haskell maybe.
Yeah.
Then you definitely have an, it's way easier for you.
I did notice that your team has a lot of, what was it? A lot of Erlang programmers, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So basically, the whole core blockchain developers, the blockchain itself is developed in Erlang. Mm. So So they, of course, they're very familiar with this functional programming paradigm. And
and actually, on that note, you have a relatively large team. So I'm assuming that you went through an ICO or something, or I mean, what's the history of the company? Briefly, of course.
So there was no ICO, but there was a contribution campaign in April last year. That was before I joined the project, so I can't tell you so much about.
Okay, fair enough. And I'd also just like to, now we've talked about how people might create dApps. You mentioned the App Store. How I can see you have a sort of a screenshot right at the top of the webpage about how that may look. Well, I think this is more after someone has already installed some, but do you envisage this looking like more traditional app stores, or do you have a different idea for it?
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning, well, you can basically create your apps as a web app, and it will, so our wallet is kind of a browser, except of inserts another layer that allows your app to communicate with the wallet. So you, technology-wise, your app is a web app, and you talk about with a post message interface to talk to our wallet and for signing requests and things like that. And in the beginning, of course, people can also create their own apps and deploy them to the app stores if they want. And but then they have to do a bit more on their own and can use less of the infrastructure that we provide. But that's, of course.
Okay. And now here comes the difficult question. Like what you're offering, I've seen elements of in Lisk, in... I'm now having a complete blank. There's another Berlin company that claims to be the mobile OS for blockchain. I'm having an absolute blank on the name. Oh dear. Anyway, maybe I'll just summarize the question with sort of how do you think you compare to some of the other projects working on similar ideas?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there are, of course, other projects having similar goals in mind. Still, I think the way how to do that is for Eternity is quite different than for other projects. And so to have the system like creating a new blockchain on one hand, but also like new tools on the application layer to make it easy for people to develop and safe, which is also secure, which is easy. And I think also with all these features that are already integrated in the core blockchain technology, I haven't seen that so far. Mm-hmm. And I think that will be a really good project in the end.
Okay.
And really help people to build more and better decentralized apps.
And I think just one final question around this, because it's something I've noticed a lot, which is a positive, and you mentioned it yourself several times. This whole aspect of it's been a very positive trend in the space, in that suddenly everyone is realizing that you can't just make cool technology, you have to actually make it understandable as well. And there's been a very big focus, I've noticed, on the developer experience, on making sure there's documentation, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, at least in your small part of the team that you manage, how important is that to you?
Oh, this is so very important. I mean, especially since we're working on this application layer, that's one of the key things that we are working on, how to create better documentation. And currently we're still also developing at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. So the underlying technology is changing. We're still in the process of developing the apps, and still we already document a lot of stuff also will change. And that is like, it's one of our things I would say 40% of our time. So,
Jeff. Excellent. I'm glad to hear
how to make it more. It's not only writing documentation, but it's also about thinking of ways how to can we make this more accessible.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially that we have, for example, this functional programming paradigms, which are not very known out there to web app developer, for example.
Look, I mean, I do some of this kind of work as a job, but I also know that in some respects, if you make the platform, the language easy to understand in the first place, then the documentation is also less.
And this programming language, Sophia, has a steep learning curve. Yeah. You have a lot of benefits if you go through this progress.
So obviously it's still fairly early days for the product, the platform. But what's on the roadmap for the next 6 months?
Yeah, so the plan is to have a release candidate for the mainnet launch, and with that also release a couple of the basic infrastructure to build apps on top. And from there we're very curious to see how and which way are people using it, and then from there on also adapt to that and build more tools, build more documentation, also create more tutorials. And I think it will be from then on, once the basic technology is out there, a lot about making things easier and remove obstacles.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to make sure people know about?
No, I think it's a good overview. I mean, there also in the core technology, there's a lot for example, when it comes to the interactive performance of a chain. So that's another usability problem, right? So people are used in online shops, you click the buy button and then you don't want to wait. Or in general, if you click any button. there are usability studies that show that 100 milliseconds already a lot when we use blockchain.
Somewhat depressing, but
when we look at blockchain technology and talk about the interactive performance, we look at response times about we're talking about almost a minute, sounds like that. And to address this challenge, we implement in the core technology, a technology is called Bitcoin NG, that allows to split up big blocks and really small micro blocks and have a way faster response times. And we're talking here about block times about 3 to 5 seconds. And that will also help app developers a lot because of the interactive performance of the blockchain is way better.
Okay. So yeah, it sounds like you've got a lot of interesting aspects there. And sometimes, especially when you're just looking at a project's website, it's hard to always dig out exactly what these key differences are, which obviously is also part of the challenge for you as well, is to make sure people understand that, especially as hopefully all these projects finally become kind of live, usable projects in the near future, and people start making decisions about what they're going to use. You need to make sure that the positive aspects of yours are clear to people, I suppose. That was my interview with Emil Wagner from the Eternity Blockchain Project. If you have enjoyed the show, you can find previous episodes at gregariousmammal.com/podcast, and you can support the show at gregariousmammal.com/support or leaving a review wherever you consume your podcast episodes. I have been at Chris Chinch on Twitter and ChrisChinchilla.com on the general internet. And until next time, thank you for listening.